Hello, friends. It's me, the president of Chickenlandia. Did you know that I have a new book that is now available for purchase? You heard that right. It's called Let's All Keep Chickens, The Down-to-Earth Guide to Natural Practices for Healthier Birds and a Happier World. It's now available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, and more. For more information on how you can grab your copy, just click the link in the show notes. It's so exciting, I can barely handle it. Okay, on with the show.
Welcome to Chickenlandia's 100% friendly podcast, Bok Talk. This show will help you learn all about how backyard chicken keeping can be fun, entertaining, and stress-free. Here's your host, the president of Chickenlandia!
Hello, friends! Welcome to Chickenlandia, and welcome to Bok Talk, your 100% friendly backyard chickens show. Thank you, everyone that is here in the chat. We've got a bunch of people here already, and thank you to those that are listening to the podcast. Today, we are going to talk about your favorite thing when it comes to chickens, mites and lice, a most fun topic. That's what we're talking about today. But we will make it fun because, you know, in Chickenlandia, we're going to make it fun. But it's important that we talk about this. A lot of people feel like, oh, I don't have to worry about mites and lice right now. Let me tell you, you need to have a plan. And today we're going to talk about our winter plan for mites and lice that will affect the whole rest of the year. Today, I am going to answer a question that was submitted through my website. And I just want to let you know, if you guys want to submit a question, all you have to do is go to my website, welcometochickenlandia.com. Go to the contact section, and then there's a little drop-down menu, and there's a little thing where you can check ask a chicken question, okay? And then I will see that, and sometimes your question might get picked for Bok Talk. I will tell you something that happened this week. I have realized, most of you know I'm on social media. I've got Facebook, I've got Instagram, I've got Twitter, I've even got TikTok. Although I don't post that often on TikTok, at least not right now. Maybe in the future that will change. So I am just at this point right now getting inundated with questions. So I realized that I missed, like, I don't even know how many questions that came in through Facebook. And then in Instagram, sometimes they go into a weird folder and you don't see them until weeks later. And it's just too much. I've realized it is too much. So I'm going to have to, like, really make my website the main place for questions to be submitted, because then it's all in one place. And I, you know, there's no way for me to get to everybody, but I really do try. I really try to answer when I can. And then you might also be chosen to be, you know, for your question to be featured on Bok Talk. So to me, that's like a win-win. I hate to, you know, I mean, the kind of person I am, I really like to answer any question that anyone has. And I know if you guys have been following me for a while, you know that I'm like that. I answer my comments if I can. So it just drives me nuts not to be able to answer people. But I think it's getting to a point now where it's just, like, too much. So please go to my website. I love to hear from you guys. And there goes my dogs. my dogs like to hear from you too. So I just want to say hi to some people who came in on the chat. Just Make It is here. Thank you for being here. Chanel is here. Sunil is here. I'm sorry. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. Kathy Warzala. Christina's Corner is here. Of course, 13 Moons Homestead is here. She's one of my trusty moderators. And Kelsey at Lavender Lane Farm is here as well. She's a moderator, and she's also on the Chickenlandia team. She is very knowledgeable about chickens. So sometimes it helps to tag her when you have a chicken question. So I do want to let you guys know that the way that I do my lives is I will answer the question that was submitted through my website. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to answer that question. We're also going to talk about our winter mites and lice plan. And then I know I'm getting questions that are coming in on the chat, but I can't answer those until the end. I'm going to open it up for questions. And I'll try to get to as many questions as I can. But first, one more thing I want to mention. If you guys were on my live 2 weeks ago, then you know I have something very exciting in the works. It is a Backyard Chickens 101 course. It is Chickenlandia's course for everyone. So I am working on that every single day to get that ready for this chick season. I don't have an exact date for when it is going to come out, but we're hoping to roll it out at very close to the beginning of chick season. So just if you haven't joined my mailing list, whenever you go to my website to submit your question, you can also join my mailing list. If you go to welcometochickenlandia.com, it usually just comes up. There's like a pop-up that comes up. But if you have pop-ups blocked, you can just scroll to the bottom and it'll say like, join, you know, click here for the latest news from Chickenlandia. And I don't send out a whole ton of emails. I'm just not like that. So you can feel safe joining my mailing list and I don't sell your information just so you know. But if you do that, then you will, stay informed about the latest news concerning my course that is coming out. And I'm super duper excited about that. You guys know that education is my passion. I have been a backyard chicken educator for many years and I've been missing it. This last year was like, I didn't get to do my seminars. I didn't get to do my classes because, you know, everything changed. So now I'm going to be offering something online. So that's really exciting for me. And I hope that, you know, if you guys decide to do it, that would be awesome. Or you can let your newbie chicken dreaming friends know about it so that they can start out their chicken adventure right. Okay, so let's get into this super fun topic about mites and lice in chickens. You know, I mentioned earlier, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't really have to worry about mites and lice in the winter because it's cold. And obviously these critters will die off. They can't live during these cold temperatures. Well, let me tell you, mites, for one, will hibernate. And they will be dormant through the colder months. And as soon as it gets warm, they will come out of the woodwork, literally. My dogs are going crazy. Can you guys hear that? You probably can't. Like, I always say, my dogs are going crazy. My kids are going crazy. And people are like, oh, I don't hear that. But you might hear it. Anyway, this is broadcasting from my home. So I have 5 dogs, 5 rescue dogs, and they're going nuts right now. So anyway, yes, mites will hibernate in the winter. And depending on the climate where you live, it could be that the conditions are actually right for these parasites in the wintertime. Let's say you live in Florida, at Southern Florida, and inside your coop right now, it's damp, it's a little bit cool, it's not too cold. I mean, those are really good conditions for mites and lice. So what we really want to do is, especially during this time, be mindful that your chickens have everything they need to not have a parasite infestation. And then we'll talk a little bit also about what you can do if you get one, because it does happen. It happens. It happens to the best of us. It has certainly happened to me more than once. So we are going to talk about our plan. And the first thing, and I know that I say this all the time, chickens end up with an infestation. It's usually because they are compromised in another way. So I have definitely had a situation in Chickenlandia where I had a chicken that was sick. And I discovered lice on that chicken. And then I went out and checked the rest of my birds, and I did not see any critters on the rest of my birds. Now, that doesn't mean that they weren't there, because probably they were there, but they were not infested because they had strong systems, they have strong immune systems, they're getting everything they need, they're healthy birds. And usually that type of an infestation happens when a bird is compromised in another way. So the number one thing always throughout the year when it comes to preventing a mite and lice infestation or any kind of a parasite infestation is really making sure that your birds have everything that they need to be healthy. So that means that you want them to have a good nutritious diet. You want them to have two really important supplements, which would be layer grit and a calcium supplement, either oyster shell or their own crushed eggshells given back to them. You want them to have clean water every day. And there's other immune boosting things that I talk about all the time that you can offer them as well. But mainly the number one thing, really the number one thing that you want to be sure of is that your chickens aren't getting stressed out, because we know that stress affects the immune system. We know that in people, and that is true for chickens too. So make sure they have enough space. Make sure they're not living under some kind of stressful condition where there's like a bully in the flock, or there's a rooster acting up, or there's, you know, even if there's like disturbances happening a lot that's stressing them out, like predator attacks. These are things that you really want to be mindful of, because when they get out of control, you are more likely to have parasites, disease, and other things in your flock that you don't want to deal with. So, of course, regular cleaning is important in the winter, especially because you can get more ammonia buildup in the winter, depending on the conditions inside your coop. You want to just, and in general, they're spending more time in their coop because the nights are longer. So I find that I need to clean the coop more in the winter time. So make sure that you do that. Make sure you're cleaning out the nesting boxes. And you may want to have some kind of a preventative thing in the nesting boxes. I use aromatic herbs like mint and lavender. I use lemon verbena is a really good one. And these might help to mitigate parasite infections. When I clean the chicken coop, I do like to use some kind of spray that, you know, helps to keep mites away. And I'll put some links in the description and in the show notes, but there's some good sprays out there that are benign. They're all natural that you can spray on your roosts, and that will help to also keep critters away. And then just inspect your birds regularly. I have a friend, she has a channel called Chicken Hughes, and she's got some really good videos on that channel. But there's this one where she goes out to inspect all her chickens. And that can be like really daunting to a lot of people, especially if you have more of a wild flock, like like in my flock, there's a lot of chickens that don't like to be held or picked up. So it's just crazy. Whenever I have to like pick all of them up to do something, it's just completely crazy. So it would be better if you wait until they're on the roost at night, and then you can go out there and pluck them off the roost and inspect them. And a great way to do that, she went out there and she had like a headlamp, and she went out and had a headlamp, and then that's how she just inspected every chicken. And she just like went through and like lifted up their tail and looked around their vent, and it was so easy because she had that headlamp. So I thought that was brilliant. I have not been smart enough to get a headlamp yet, but I need to, because I think it needs to be like one of those things that you have when you have chickens, because it will really come in handy. And here's something that is really important, because in the winter time or in the colder months, like in the fall, it's already like really wet and rainy, and it's pretty cold. So the chickens don't have a place in their natural environment to dust bathe because there's just not a whole lot of sun beating down up here in the Pacific Northwest in the fall. So I have to be really mindful about making sure that they have a place where they can dust bathe during these months where there's nowhere in their natural environment for them to do that. And so the way I do that, and I have a couple of videos about this on my channel, they're very popular videos where I make dust baths for the chickens using a cat litter box. And I just get a cat litter box. I will put some dirt or sand in it. I will put some wood ash in it. I will put some diatomaceous earth in it, which we're going to talk about in a minute because you guys know I like to talk about diatomaceous earth. And I will put some aromatic herbs to make, just to complete their spa experience. And somebody asked me like, okay, I need to know the exact measurements. And I was like, okay, I'm not a measurement person, just telling you right now. But what I figured was the best would be 3 parts dirt, 1 part wood ash, and 1 half part diatomaceous earth. And the wood ash and the diatomaceous earth are optional. Okay. If you don't feel comfortable with those two ingredients, just dirt or sand in a box is great. Okay. So I don't want you to feel like you're doing something wrong if you don't want to use those ingredients, because some people don't feel comfortable with them. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. And then for the herbs, just sprinkle it in there. You don't have to measure that. So that is what I do. I have 2 different places. I have a place in the coop where they can dust bathe. And that is actually like a litter box with a clear lid over it. And they go inside of it. And that keeps the dirt from getting just all over the coop. Cause when they take a dust bath, they're like, kicking out their legs and going crazy and getting dirt everywhere. So I dealt with that a little bit. And then I was like, okay, no. So the litter box that I have has a clear lid over that. And I got that on Amazon. I hope it's still available. If it is, I'm going to put a link in the show notes or in the description, because it's a great litter box. It's a little bit on the expensive side. I think it was like $40, but it was the only one that I could find that had a clear lid. And I think they really want that. Like, they want the light coming on to wherever they're dust bathing, instead of like going into, like a regular litter box would be like dark inside. And I don't think they like that when it comes to where they want to dust bathe. So yeah, I will put that link. And if you can find something that is cheaper, let me know. Cause I like to talk about things that are accessible to everybody in Chickenlandia. So let's say you have done everything right. You did everything right. And you still got critters. I'm telling you, it happens. It happens. Like I said before, parasites are everywhere. They are all over our natural environment. They are very important for our ecosystem. Okay, so even though it's really hard, what I try to say is that, let's think about how we can work in cooperation with these critters, instead of just always thinking about, oh my gosh, I have to do everything I can to eradicate them, to, not come in contact with them, because that is really something that will stress you out. And it is near impossible. And in Chickenlandia, it's all about chicken keeping in a way that is fun, easy, entertaining, and stress-free. Chickens should not be making you feel more stressed out than you already are. Because we're stressed out right now. Okay? But we're supposed to go out into the chicken yard and be like, breathe. and not feel stressed out. So, if it happens, I want you to just take a deep breath and say, this is normal. This is me participating in nature. This is my chickens participating in nature. And what you're going to do now is bring balance back to your chicken yard. I'm getting philosophical today, okay? All right. So if you must treat your chickens, there are three treatments that I really like above others. And these are all relatively natural. And that's, I definitely am a natural leaning chicken keeper. So the first one that I like to use is permethrin. And that usually comes in a powder. I believe you can get it in a spray as well. And that is actually not as natural as these other two that I'm going to tell you about, but it's pretty natural. It comes from chrysanthemums. And what you would do is just treat each bird. You want to dust them, you know, get under their feathers. You want to get behind where they're behind their neck, under their wings, in the vent area. You really just want to get like underneath those feathers, put some gloves on, and just get the dust wherever you can get it. And definitely wear a mask. If you're using any kind of powder, wear a mask. Because we, and you know what? These days, you probably already have a mask on. So keep it on. Okay. So you're going to treat each bird and do that 10 days apart so that you can catch the life cycle of the critter that you're dealing with. And definitely you want to clean out your coop and you want to treat your coop. So pyrethroids are not great for bees. They are not good for cats. If you have cats, it is toxic to your cats. And they're not great for shellfish, so or aquatic life. So if you know, I would just be very careful about keeping it limited to your coop. If you have cats that are hanging out in your coop, I would not choose this option because it's not safe for your cat. Elector PSP is the new like bougie mite treatment for your chickens. It is a bacteria that is found naturally in the soil. So it's very, very natural. You treat it the same way you would use any pyrethrum product. Treat each bird twice, 10 days apart, and then also treat your coop. And it's pretty handy because it's very concentrated, and then you can put it in like a spray thing and spray your whole coop down, spray the chickens down, and it lasts a really long time. But I will tell you, it is expensive. It's like $150 if I'm thinking correctly. And so that is just not accessible to a lot of people. It's great and I love it, but I can't make it like my number one choice because I know a lot of people can't, you know, simply can't afford that, no matter how long it lasts. It's like a lot of people are like, are you kidding me? Like that much? I can't spend that much money. So I get that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. It's not great for bees, but I believe that it's while it's wet, it's toxic for bees. But then once it dries, it doesn't hurt them. And that's what I have read about it. So it seems to be great stuff. I have not used it yet. I was going to buy a bottle recently and then I couldn't find it. But I do believe it should be available on Amazon. I will look. And if I can find it, I'll put a link in the description and in the show notes. So my favorite thing to use for prevention and for treatment is diatomaceous earth. I will dust each chicken very well. And I will wear a mask to do this. I actually will do 3 doses 10 days apart for diatomaceous earth because it takes a little bit longer in my experience. I will also clean the coop and I'll treat the coop really well. And I'll usually just use some kind of spray for the roosts because, you know, diatomaceous earth on the roost doesn't really work very well. It is also not good for bees, unfortunately, and it's not good for other beneficial insects. So keep it limited to the coop. I don't go crazy with it. I don't throw it all over everything. I don't put it all over my chicken yard because it will disrupt the balance of your natural environment. So I just keep it confined to the coop. A lot of people will say, if you go into any forum, really, and you'll say, I want to use diatomaceous earth, Many, many people will say it's worthless, it doesn't work, don't use it, blah, 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 blah. That is not my experience with it. I have used it many times to treat mites and lice, and it works quite well in my experience. And it is sold as an insecticide. That's what it is, if you get the right kind. So, I'm not sure where that sentiment came from. I think it probably came from not actually using it correctly or giving up on it too soon, because it is a natural product. And in general, natural products will take a little bit longer to work, and you have to use it right. It's not like, something that is super lethal that is going to, eradicate everything very quickly. It's just not like that. So this brings me to my question for today, and it is from Danielle. She sent a question through my website, welcometochickenlandia.com. And Danielle says, "Hello, I have had chickens since March, and we have always used diatomaceous earth first in our coop and run and then in the bedding. 2 weeks ago, I noticed my rooster shaking his head, and I have been looking up what it could be, and I believe they have mites." I'm sorry. Like I said, it happens to the best of us. So I have been treating with poultry dust, which is probably a permethrin product, which is fine. But I saw that you use diatomaceous earth for yours. I've been looking up more and more, and so much information about it and why it's good and bad. So my question to you is, why do you use diatomaceous earth? I have used it in their dust baths, in the coop and run, and not a lot, just a small layer. But since looking up how to treat for mites, I have read how bad it is. I bet you have, because there's a lot of stuff out there. Sorry, just one worried chicken mom. And I have been following you now and want my chickens to live a happy, healthy, organic life. So first of all, Danielle, please don't be sorry. This is a great question. And I completely understand. I understand your concern. I know, there is so much information out there. It's confusing. And so I hope what I tell you today just gives you some information that you can take, and then you can make an educated decision on what you want to do. But it is really a dilemma, because there's just so much opposing information, and it's really gotten very, I feel like in the chicken community, there's unfortunately, what do you call it when it's when I get on these lives, like I forget words, when there's two sides and they're really divided, and in the chicken community, there's like the all natural side, and then there's the not so all natural side, and they both have chickens and they both love their chickens, but they are very divided, and it's really unfortunate. And I do see that sometimes there are people with a platform that will further that divide, and because it creates it's a marketing strategy, to be very honest with you. And I don't ever want to be that person. That's like the antithesis of Chickenlandia. Where I come from, it's like, look, if you're keeping chickens and you're not hurting your chickens, you are good with me, because that means less chickens in a factory farm. And that means healthier, a healthier future for our children. And so that is my goal, is for chickens and humans to be happier and healthier. So when it comes to things like diatomaceous earth, I really don't want to like kick up a whole bunch of dust, because I think that, just whatever you decide is okay. So yeah, I am somebody that uses diatomaceous earth, and I will tell you right now that there is some level of risk if you use diatomaceous earth. To me, it's a very low level of risk, and I will tell you why. Really, where the alarmist and the alarmist information comes from and the misinformation comes from is that there are two kinds of diatomaceous earth. One kind is amorphous diatomaceous earth, and that is found naturally in our environment. It is fossilized diatoms, and it is used in pesticides and, you know, used as a pesticide widely. It is widely used. It is widely used in animal feed. It is widely used in our food and in our toothpaste and in our makeup. I probably got it on my face right now. Diatomaceous earth. It is amorphous diatomaceous earth, and it is generally considered safe. Then there is another kind of diatomaceous earth, and that is crystalline diatomaceous earth. It has been heat treated. It is used in industry, like it is used for mainly for pool filtration. And it is not considered safe. It can cause lung issues. And it is not, you cannot have, like if you find a bag of food grade diatomaceous earth, it cannot have more than 1% of crystalline diatomaceous earth in it to be labeled as food grade. And sometimes it doesn't have any in it, but it has to have less than 1%. So there are people that feel like that 1% of risk is not worth it to them. And I absolutely 100% respect that. When I weigh using diatomaceous earth, especially as a preventative in my flock, compared to some of the other things that I would have to do if I was dealing with infestations, especially if I was dealing with a lot of infestations, to me, I am willing to absorb that level of risk because the other synthetic options, I don't want to use those because anything that I put into my chickens or on my chickens or in their environment is not confined to my flock or my backyard. It goes into the environment. So if I'm putting Frontline on my chickens, which has not been tested on chickens. So we don't know anything about it, whether it goes into the eggs. We don't know about the egg withdrawal. We don't know any of that because it's not for chickens. And we know that even for the animals that it's supposed to be used on, there is risk. So, when I compare that or even ivermectin, which is one of the more benign medications that you could use or treatments that you can use. But then there's the issue of critters getting resistant to them and having to switch to other things. And I will tell you right now, I did have a chicken that literally dropped dead from ivermectin. Now, to be fair, it was an ivermectin injection. And I didn't know at the time how dangerous that was for a bird. I was under the care of a veterinarian who recommended that to me. And that bird died immediately, just died. Now, I had at the time probably 20 birds and one died. But I still don't want that. And I've never had a bird that dropped dead from putting diatomaceous earth on them. Now, whether or not there would be some type of long-term effect, that's a concern to some people. And I think that that's just something that you'll have to decide and you'll have to weigh whether or not you want to do that. But in general, I really just feel like when I'm comparing it to other things and even Elector PSP, which is a great product, you know, the hard thing about that for me is how expensive it is. And I just want people to have an alternative to that is also natural. So if you feel like, I don't want to use diatomaceous earth, then just, make sure they have their dust baths, make sure they have access to them through the winter so that you're not dealing with mites and lice as soon as it warms up a little bit, and just put dirt in their dust baths. That is enough. To me, I like to have that extra protection of the diatomaceous earth in the dust bath. And I don't put it everywhere, like I said. You can, I will put a little bit in their nesting boxes, and I'll put some in their dust baths. And to me, it's worth it. And when I started doing that, I had just so much less of a problem. You know, I live in the Pacific Northwest, and it's just, it's brutal up here with the parasites. We have a great environment for them. So I hope that that helped a little bit. That's where I'm coming from. You know, get food grade diatomaceous earth. It's amorphous diatomaceous earth. It is used as a pesticide. Get the food grade kind, and then you'll know that the level of risk in it is very low. So there we go. How do you feel about that? How are you feeling, Danielle? I hope you feel less confused. All right. So guys, I am going to open the chat right now for some questions. If you have a question, number one, I'm going to try to answer it if I know the answer. Sometimes I get stumped. I also have Lavender Lane Farms in the chat, so she may be able to help if I get too stumped. Wade Brom, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right. I'm probably not. Brom? Maybe. What do you think of the deep composting method? So Wade is talking about the deep litter method. Really what it is, it's creating a composting system inside your chicken coop. And I absolutely love it. I used to do it. And then I got ducks. And they kind of made it pretty impossible for me to do it. Because really the best case scenario would be for the compost for your system to be very dry. You want it to be dry inside the coop. And coincidentally, you do not want to use diatomaceous earth if you're doing the deep litter method in the litter, because it will disturb the beneficial bacteria that's needed to create the composting system. I think it's a great idea, especially in the winter, because we know that compost provides some heat, it releases some heat. And so it's just another way to kind of keep it a little bit warmer inside your coop for your chicken. So I absolutely love the deep litter method, Wade. And if you can pull it off, I think it's a great idea. Kelsey asks, best method to dust your chickens when treating with diatomaceous earth for mites and lice? So I have seen some people, first of all, you know, wear a mask so you don't get dust, and you're not inhaling dust. I've seen some people put it in and actually Julie, my friend Julie, who comes to help me every once in a while, she would put it in a container that's like, you know, if you've ever been to a restaurant and there's like the mustard and ketchup container, and it's like a cylindrical container, and then it has like a little cone shape on the top, and then you squirt out the ketchup and the mustard. Am I making any sense? I hope I make sense right now. Julie used one of those, and she put poultry dust in it, and that's how she treated the chickens. And it was so easy because you just sit there, you know, you put gloves on, and then you dust the chickens with that, and it just comes out in like a poof. And that seems to me to be a really handy way to do it. Or you just do it like, I have a video all about chicken mites and lice, and I'm going to put that in the description and in the show notes. And in that video, I show how I dust them. And I'm just like grabbing clumps of it and like rubbing it under their feathers and, you know, in the vent area and under their wings. Just Make It asks, are silkies friendly? Yes, I would say generally they are. Now, chickens have personalities just like people, so you might get a cranky little silky in the mix, but she'll still be plenty funny and fun for you. So, silkies are usually bred for temperament, for beauty, and for broodiness. So usually they're pretty sweet. Definitely you want to handle them a lot when they're little. Chi Girl asks, do you house your chickens and ducks together? If so, what do you do for duck water? I'm struggling with water in the coop. That's a good question. So I do have a video. I think it's called like a duck hack, keeping chickens and ducks together or something, or coop hack or something like that. And it's a pretty popular video on my channel. And it's all about how I keep them in the coop and keep the mess down, because anybody that has ducks knows that they're super messy animals. And thank goodness they're so cute, or else we would go nuts trying to deal with them because they're so like muddy and poopy and wet. So I do not keep water in my coop. My ducks do stay with the chickens in the coop, but they don't need water overnight. So I don't keep water in the coop. I keep water outside of the coop, and I have like pools of water. I have 3 pools of water that are not so deep that a chicken can drown in it. And, but they are, you know, big enough so that a duck can get in it and have a little splash around, but I don't keep water in the coop. So that's, I would not do that, especially in the winter, because you will end up with way too much moisture in the coop, and that's, you can have problems in the winter from that. So I would go check out that video, but in the meantime, just think about how you can provide like dishes of water for them outside the coop, but not in it. Charlotte Anderson asks, what kind of litter do you use? Well, you know, Charlotte, I was using hemp for a while. And I have recently switched back to pine. And I'm sad because I really wanted to like the hemp. Everybody I know that uses it absolutely loves it. And for whatever reason, it may have been the company that I was using. You know, maybe I think it varies like from company to company, maybe. But I found that it didn't last as long as like pine does. It didn't help keep, you know, ammonia levels down the way that pine does. And it would also just get like so almost like cement in my coop, because when my ducks come in, they will bring in a little bit of moisture on their feet, and it just got nasty. And I don't know. Julie was like, I don't think that you should keep using this. And I was like, I know, I don't think I can. But you know, so many people have had good experience with it that I don't want to like make a video about how it's bad, because and then I'll start, let me start that controversy. Hemp is bad. No, it is not bad. I think it has to do with the company I was using. I think I needed to switch companies. And use something different. And maybe at some point another company will come to me and say, please try mine because it's the best. And I will definitely try it. But I switched back to pine. But I've used straw, and I liked straw. Not a super big fan of sand. I know a lot of people use it and they love it. But I think because of the climate that I'm in, it just doesn't work that well. And I have ducks too. So that changes things. Mandy Chowinski, how would you recommend introducing 13 pullets half grown to an existing flock of 4 laying hens and a male guinea? They don't free range, considering it though. Figure I should introduce them first. Yes. I do have a couple of videos about integrating new chickens. And the main thing that you want to do is go slowly, especially with the guinea. But he's used to chickens, so it shouldn't be too bad. But go slowly. Make sure that the pullets are pretty much the same size as your existing flock. But with that many, they're going to have the advantage, because there are just so many of them that it'll be easier than if there were less young chickens and more big chickens in the existing flock. But I do have a couple of videos where I'm integrating new, actually teeny tiny little bantam chickens into my flock. And I've got a mixed flock with big chickens and little chickens and, you know, alien chickens and fuzzy all kinds of chickens. they look like they're aliens. So I would start out with them separate but seeing. So they are in a contained area where they can see the existing flock. The existing flock can see them, but they can't get to each other. And, you know, they should be able to get very close to each other. There's like just fencing between them, but they can't start, you know, physically fighting with each other. And what that will do is they will work some of that pecking order through the fence. They'll posture with each other and they'll figure out where they stand. And then if you can do that for at least a week, 2 weeks is better. And then put them together at night and get out there in the morning and observe them in the morning to make sure nobody's getting beat up. And as long as there is not blood being drawn, then you're good. And I am absolutely freaking out right now because somebody gave me a super chat of $50. And Laura, thank you. Laura Casta, I'm going to say your name right. Castanite. Gosh, I'm a Latina and I can't even say your name right now because I'm freaking out. Castanayos, help me out, Sonny's place. Maybe you say it Castellanos, but I, you know, my mom would tell me that's not how you say that name. Castellanos. Thank you, Laura. That was just so generous and so wonderful of you. I really appreciate that. So whatever I was talking about, I completely forgot. Integrating new chickens. As long as they are not drawing blood on each other, and you want to make sure that there are different areas where they can get to food and water so that no one's keeping each other from eating and drinking, definitely do that. And you'll be golden. And I will put those links in the description. Okay? And in the show notes. One more question comes from Christina's Corner. When do you think is the best time to start dusting? So do you mean like dusting for mites and lice? I wouldn't do it unless I actually saw them with, you know, critters on their body, and usually just lifting up their neck feathers, like behind their neck, looking underneath their feathers, you will see them crawling around. And sometimes if you can look up pictures of like mite eggs, because sometimes you can't see them, but you can see the eggs. So, and you may be able to see that around the vent area. So then I would do that at night. And usually, like I said, you're going to do it 10 days apart, either twice or three times. And you're going to want to clean that coop every time you treat them. I know that's awful. But I would definitely offer them a place to dust bathe all the time, all year round. Okay? That if you don't learn anything else from Chickenlandia, learn that. Guys, thank you so much for being here. Those of you that are here on the chat, thank you. Thank you to those that are listening on the podcast. Thank you for talking to Crows. They edit this podcast every time and they do a totally awesome job. You know, I say this every single time, and today it really means a lot because Christmas is coming up and I absolutely love Christmas. And the reason I love Christmas is because it reminds me how much, you know, I have a dream for peace on earth. And, you know, that's what Chickenlandia is all about. It's about peace and love and chickens. So I hope you guys have a wonderful holiday. I am trying to work on the Chickenlandia Christmas special. I cannot guarantee it because this year there's a lot going on in Chickenlandia, not just the course, but other things, which I'll be telling you about soon, and all good things. So I hopefully will have something special for you guys next week. Whether or not that happens, I will see you guys in the new year. This is the last Bok Talk of 2020. 2020. Goodbye, 2020. Hello, 2021. I will see you then. And guys, always remember, you are welcome in Chickenlandia. Bye.
Dalia Monterosso, also known as the president of Chickenlandia, is a backyard chicken educator in Northwest Washington. To submit your question to Bok Talk, visit welcometochickenlandia.com. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.